So what does Iced Earth currently have going on, John, and tell us about the current happenings?
Well, you know, the DVD just came out, so that's sort of the stopgap filler for what's coming next, which is going to be sooner than later. We're in the writing process for the new album, and we will be tracking it and recording it in Europe this summer in between the festivals that we're slated to do over there. So we'll be basically playing festivals on the weekend and heading back to Germany during the week and tracking. And then I believe we're going to mix in Tampa, Florida. And then we have an announcement that's going to be made in the next week or two about our plans in October, November that we're really excited about. And we have we've just announced, I think yesterday, the first leg of the next world tour, which is going to be in January 2014, starting off in Europe. And then we'll be coming to North America, Central, South, Asia, you know, on and on. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where we're at. There's a lot happening, actually.
Well, listening to Stu's previous band, Into Eternity, it almost seemed like he was, you know, either really high-pitched or really low. It didn't have much of a mid-range. And when you put out the Dante's Inferno with him, which I thought was amazing, it was like he developed a mid-range that I had never really heard from him before. And was that something that you guys worked on when he joined the band?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually... And it was very similar when Matt first joined the band. You know, I like the majority... and believe me, I love the high falsetto Halford stuff. I mean, I'm really into that. But the majority of Iced Earth's songs lie in the middle. So it was important to work with Stu and to develop that middle part of his voice that he never really focused on that much. So he was getting really excited because he was hearing how cool it sounds. And, you know, that you could see the spark going off in his eyes when he first came to audition. You know, I was really pushing him in ways that nobody ever had. And that's my role as a co-producer of this band, besides being the chief songwriter, is getting, try to get the best out of the guys and inspire them and push them. And you know, and Stu just loves it, man. And he's still discovering new things. I mean, he was just here with me for about 6 weeks. And you know, we have explored a couple other areas in his voice that the people haven't really heard yet. And, I think it's going to pleasantly surprise people. So we're very excited. I mean, Stu does fit this band like a glove. We have so much fun together, and we have such a great relationship in terms of just outside of the work thing. You know, outside of the job, we have such a great relationship. So it's a really very, very cool thing that we found each other.
Well, and talking about Stu's vocal abilities, and you were talking about how great of a guy he is, you know, the one thing that I noticed about this and the album Dystopia especially is the fact that, you know, I mean, he just fits this band so well, and the musical chemistry is there, and that's actually something that's not very easy to find, because as a musician, you got to find the right pieces, you got to find the people that'll fit, and I'll be honest with you, I think he fits well, and how did you know he was the guy?
Well, I could tell. The first thing I liked about Stu was when I was doing, you know, researching him, I was looking at some of their videos, and I really liked the look in his eye. That was the first thing. You know, he's intense, he's got that passionate spirit, the rage, and that's exactly the kind of front man that Iced Earth needs. So then the next step was, hey, how would his voice sound doing our stuff? So we got together, and he flew to Indiana, and I think he spent about 3 days with me, and I mean, I knew within the first 20 minutes of hearing him sing that it was going to that was the right, that he's the guy. I mean, I could just tell. I mean, I could kind of feel it on a personal level right away, but, you know, you have to make sure that the technical part is there. And it was there, and it's just gotten better and better. And, you know, I think it's really the perfect match. So, and as far as the writing process goes, I mean, Stu is, you know, one of the first things I asked him when we were talking on the phone, it was how much did he have to do with the chorus parts and Into Eternity, because there's a lot of really cool, very melodic choruses in that band stuff. And he said that he had a lot to do with that. So that told me that he could be a good co-writer and somebody that could help come up with big hook melodies. And, you know, that's not everybody can do that. So, it was, that was exciting too. And that's, that's why he's contributed so much, because frankly he comes up with really good ideas, especially when it comes to the vocal melody part, which is 99% of the time has been my job in the past. And I think, you know, that's the thing that makes it cool, is that it takes some of the pressure off of me. I mean, he contributes on a lyrical thing as well. Sometimes he writes lyrics alone. Sometimes we write them together. Sometimes I write songs alone, the lyrics for songs. But, you know, it all works. And when we talk about Stu's parts, him and I work very well together on those, and he contributes a lot, which, you know, like I said, it's different from the majority of the way things were in the past.
Well, and the thing is that when you recorded Dante's Inferno, I was a little skeptical because I loved the original so much. And when you recorded it with Stu singing, I thought it sounded amazing. And, you know, it's not an easy song to record. It's long. You got a lot of stuff going on in it. And why did you decide that this was a song you were going to re-record? And why did you re-record it in the first place?
Well, the main reason is that the fans have been requesting it for so many years, and we couldn't do it with the backing tracks, which, I mean, you have to do the backing tracks of Dante's Inferno. It's part of the song. I mean, when I composed the song, all those string sections and all the eerie sound effects and all that stuff is a big part of it. And it certainly wouldn't be the same without it. So, but we couldn't do it because the old quick track was erased on the old 2-inch tapes because we needed that track. So there was really no way to go back and reconstruct it without redoing it. And this way, you know, we were able to have a very solid click track. We had Howard Helm go in and redo the string parts and some of those, like, horn sections and the percussion and all that kind of stuff. And now we can sync the band up to a backing track machine where we have all of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, now the fans get to hear it live. So...
Well, I'll tell you what, despite the fact that the song is very long and I only have a 3-hour show, I played that song probably every show for probably a couple months. I mean, the one thing I loved about it is the fact that it sounded, you know, obviously the originals are always usually the best, but I'll tell you what, this was a great take on it, and I thought Stu sounded great on it, and it was a great introduction for him. And overall, I thought the recording of that song did the original justice.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it got some mixed reactions, and we expected that. But to be honest with you, even if Matt would have stayed in the band, we would have redone Dante also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we needed to, in order to be able to do it live, we needed to redo it and rebuild those backing tracks.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, the majority of the people liked it, and then, of course, when they heard Dystopia, you know, I mean, the reality is my passion and focus for Iced Earth was reignited anyway, even before Stu came into the band, and him coming in just elevated it that much more. So I think, you know, what you have now is we have a new era of Iced Earth that's going to be very, very strong. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and I think we're going to take it further than we ever have. I mean, clearly geographically we have done that. You know, we've gone to so many more countries and toured like never before. But I also believe that on an awareness and on a fan base level, we're going to take this band farther than it's ever gone. I mean, it's hard to beat the kind of live show that we have now, the kind of energy that's on stage, the positive chemistry that is there. You know, it's really cool.
One of the things I found amazing on the Sons of Liberty album, I was really surprised at how well you sang on it. You know, I've heard you bark out Storm Rider before, but I really didn't think you really, you know, I never really saw you as a guy with a singing voice, but you did really well. In fact, it was a lot of passion, a lot of energy, and I thought your vocal range really wasn't too bad, you know, considering you're normally not a lead singer. And why did you decide to record your own vocals on Sons of Liberty, and was it difficult?
Well, thanks, man. I mean, I've always written the majority of our vocal parts, you know, whether people realize that or not, doesn't really matter, you know, but that's just a fact. And so, I mean, you can't really judge, Storm Rider isn't singing, that's just like thrash bark.
Mm-hmm.
I never really tried to sing until my awakening process. You know, I mean, I would sing parts for the singers on demos for them to learn the songs, or if it was out of my range, which much of the Iced Earth stuff is out of my range. So that's why I would never be able to do lead vocals. I don't have a desire to in Iced Earth, because The things that I hear in my head are oftentimes beyond my ability. So a lot of times I would play like the vocal melody in an octave as a guide for the singer to go by, you know, and we would go over the cadences, the timing of the lyrics and that kind of stuff together. But so there was different ways that it was approached in the past. But when I had my awakening, that's when I decided I'm just going to sing. And, you know, I didn't study or anything. It just came out. I was just angry enough, and it motivated me enough. I felt like with the lyrical content and what the Sons of Liberty thing is all about, that I had to be the one to do it, for better or for worse. And, you know, because I know I'm not a good singer. I'm just an angry metalhead that is speaking out against the injustice. And I think the honesty of it translates to people. You know, and I think that's the way it is though with anything. I mean, you know, some people could say that James Hetfield isn't the greatest singer in the world, but he's also the front man of the biggest heavy metal band in the history. So, you know, and it's because it comes from an honest place. And I think Hetfield's voice is killer. Yeah. If you compare him to somebody like Jeff Tate or Rob Halford, okay, Bruce Dickinson, those guys are real singers. He's an attitude, man. You know, he's the rage. He's the voice that a lot of people can connect with, you know, so. It's a different thing.
Well, in reading books like The Fearful Master and stuff like that, I remember I was, you know, checking out a lot of what you wrote on Sons of Liberty were, you know, a lot of that stuff based on a lot of those books and Jekyll Island, stuff like that. And I'll tell you what, I was really refreshed to see someone actually thinking along the same wavelengths as I am. And, you know, I thought it was really cool. It was kind of like, it woke some people up and, you know, I was pretty happy when I heard this record come out.
We definitely have had. I mean, it's sort of the soundtrack for the revolution for sure, and it's a worldwide thing. I mean, I can't even tell you how many hundreds of thousands of copies of that have been burned and passed out to people. It's, you know, it's pretty cool, and that's what the goal was. It was never let's go out on tour and try to build Sons of Liberty into a commercial band where we really, you know, sell tickets and T-shirts and CDs and stuff. It's more about the message. Let's get it out there. And I encourage people to copy it and stuff. And there's no doubt that it's the effect that it's had in the awakening process on people has been, it's been pretty big. I'm pleased with it. Of course, it would have been bigger had I been able to get some press behind it. I mean, it's amazing when it came out, nobody wanted to talk about it, almost nobody, and especially over in Europe. And then, you know, it's like all of the things that I was talking about and saying started happening on, I mean, they were happening anyway, but it's like they're happening at an increased rate. And so a lot of the editors that I've known for years over in Europe in these big magazines and stuff were like, damn, John, maybe we need to pay attention to what you were talking about. And I'm like, hey, you know, and so now so many times when I'm doing Iced Earth interviews, it ends up turning into the subject matter of Sons of Liberty. And it's amazing. It's like it gets more and more legitimate all the time as time passes.
And it seems a lot of other bands too, John, have really embraced this awakening and this philosophy. And you know, you see Megadeth, for example, has always written about this stuff, you know, for the past 10 years. And you know, a band that I think of right now that's off the top of my head I was listening to today is the band Forbidden, you know, with the Omega Wave. And you see a lot of these bands having awakenings like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, Mustaine, he's been kind of awake for a long time, and I've never really been into Megadeth, so. I knew he was anti-government, anti-establishment, but I think he realizes there's a lot more going on than meets the eye. And yeah. I know Craig from, I've met Craig from Forbidden on the 70,000 Tons, and he's a really cool dude, and we got to be good buddies. And he explained to me a lot about what Omega Wave was about, and I was on his radio show a couple times, and you know, he's a great guy, very awake guy, very cool.
Well, Dystopia to me is probably one of the best albums you've ever put out. In fact, I'd rank it up there in the probably top two or three. And it almost seemed like this Sons of Liberty thing, when you came out with that, because I thought the songwriting on Sons of Liberty was really good. It almost, like, to me, transitioned into a great Iced Earth album, you know, obviously as a follow-up. And was that the case? I mean, was Sons of Liberty, like, I guess what really ignited your passion back in Iced Earth and why Dystopia turned out so well?
Yeah, it did. That's what I mean. I mean, it made me, you know, come alive again, and it made me really start to appreciate Iced Earth for whatever reason. You know, I mean, I was just so down so many challenges through the years, and so at some point you get really worn out from beating your head against a brick wall, you know, that, and that's what it feels like. It's like over and over and over, you know, there's some roadblock in the way. And I guess waking up to all that stuff made me really put things in perspective more, and it fired my creative juices up, and so yes, I mean, the message is still in the Iced Earth stuff. It's going to be in the new one as well. It's more veiled than what it is in Sons of Liberty, you know, because I never wanted Iced Earth to get political. That's not what Iced Earth is about. Sons of Liberty is, I wouldn't say it's really political. It's basically freedom versus slavery. I mean, if you want to call that politics, go ahead. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's what it really is. It's not left or right. It's none of that kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
But the Dystopia album has, you know, it has the message in it in a lot of ways. It's a little more veiled. It's kind of disguised in being about certain movies or whatever. But and even within the Something Wicked story, the theme is there. And like I said, it is going to be in the new one. So, yeah, it did translate into that. And the energy and the passion that I started feeling again for music was translated into it. And that's what I meant. Even before Stu came in, I was already pumped up and fired up and really ready to bring Iced Earth back to what it should be. You know, I was getting focused again. And Stu understands, you know, he hasn't done the research that I've done, but he was getting it. You know, I was explaining to him what was going on. He understood it totally, and he tapped right into my vibe and where I was headed with it, and he thought it was great. So, it just works, man. You know?
Well, I could tell you that the one thing that I thought was great about the Sons of Liberty album is that, you know, at that time, you know, I remember all through college, I read many of the books that you've referenced in the liner notes and on the website. And at the same time, I was starting to write lyrics with my own band in the same manner, because, you know, these things, when you read about this, and it's not like, John, it's not like it's something where, you know, this is just made up or false. I mean, you know, you can prove what you can prove. I mean, you know, I mean, some of this stuff is real. And it really, when the Sons of Liberty came out, it had an impact on me, you know, as a person, because of the fact that I had read all these books and I had known about a lot of this stuff for a long time. And it was like, finally, someone to me has the message and is bringing that message out to everyone in the world.
Well, that's good, man. That's what, you know, that was the goal. And I was like, you know, you get a lot of people say, what do you think you're going to do about all this? You know, you're trying to start some revolution with your music. I'm like, hey, man, I'm hoping that at best that I can wake up some kid that ends up being the next Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know what the effects of you spreading the truth are going to have. You have no way of knowing, because it just, once it takes off, it's like a fire that spreads. And that's the idea. You know, you get some kid that's like, that understands, that has a level of discernment and understanding of what's going on, and you never know what that kid's going to do with that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Yeah.
And it's worth trying. I mean, just to, I love people that come up with that kind of argument. It's like, well, what are you going to do about it? You're not going to do nothing except sit around and watch television like the drone that you are. I mean, that's 90% of the American people. That's why we're in so much trouble.
Yep, yep.
Well, to me, there's a lot more laziness these days than there used to be. And, you know, people are just sitting back watching TV. They don't do anything with themselves. Kids don't play outside like they used to. And, you know, it's almost like people nowadays just have this sense of entitlement nowadays.
Yeah, well, you're right. It is. It's an entitlement society, and it comes from all the crap from television and the government and the whole thing. It's just disgusting. It's a disgusting mess. And, you know, we're going to pay dearly for it. American people, everybody's going to suffer for this.
Well, John, it's been great to talk to you, and I have to ask you for my last question. Do you have any last words to say to all of the Iced Earth fans and Sons of Liberty fans out there that are going to be checking out this interview?
Well, just, you know, there's a lot of people, I noticed, like, our fans, a lot, especially the North American ones, are like, where's the States? Why aren't you coming here? It's like, hey, come on, guys, we're starting the headline tour in Europe. That doesn't mean that's all we're doing. We're going to be doing a lot more. So, you know, I think we'll be on the road in March in North America. And you know, I'm sure there's going to be more than one leg in North America, and the same for Europe. So, just, you know, Iced Earth is, is on the march big time, man. We're fired up. We've got a good crew around us and good management, good positive energy everywhere. And I think you're gonna see the band in a way that you never have before. You know, it just keeps getting better and better, and we're excited. And I know the fan base is really fired up, and everything's going really cool.